But I have, yeah.
Straighten that tablecloth.
I'll go with you.
Congratulations for your gold placard action.
Non-voting member.
I like Rocco. Your position in Zoom is really nice and framed.
Right in front of the camera. I'm all right.
I will see how we're doing. See how the five of them.
I don't see how there is.
At the table. Deputy parliamentarian, that's sick. All right, everybody, wait.
Absolutely.
All right, everybody. Everybody. Actually, just select. All right, everybody, the decorum delegates, we're going to get this meeting rolling. The time is 4:47 on September 21st, 2023. By the power vested in me by the Board of Trustees of Cornell University, I'm going to call this meeting to order. If we could get a roll call, that would be fantastic.
Marla Bakri, Lucia Balestrieri,
she's on her way.
Lizzie Barrett, Issa Tuberi, present. Rocco DiLorenzo,
here.
Karis Everett,
present.
Niles Height, Clyde Letterman, Ezugo Ononye. Suraj Parikh, Casey Platkin, Imani Rezeka,
present.
Andrew Richmond,
present.
Stellar Sun,
Clyde Letterman is holding Amy Wang's proxy.
Amy Wang's. Okay. Andrew Talone. Benjamin Terhar. Claire Ting.
Present.
Adam Vinson. And then Patrick Keel.
Present. And Ezigo Anonya is now on the Zoom. Okay, we will now start, as we always do, with the land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gaigahono, the Cayuga Nation. The Gaigahono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gaiga'ona dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of the Gaiga'ona people, past and present, to these lands and waters. Now we will move on to open. Vice President Letterman.
I ask unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that resolutions 23 and 24 be added to the resolutions calendar for consideration at this meeting.
Second.
There is motion on the floor. Is there any dissent to that motion? Seeing none, resolution 23 and 24 are added to the agenda in the new businesses calendar. In the resolutions calendar. And those should be in the box for anybody who's interested. Okay, we'll now move on to item 3, open microphone. This is a time where community members can say a couple words if they're interested. Any interest in speaking on the community microphone tonight? Seeing none, we will be moving on to item 4, approval of the minutes from last week's meeting. Those are in the box. Please open them up, take a quick read, and make any amendments if you so see fit. Executive Vice President Ting.
I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to amend the vote count for the resolution 19, the election rules. So on the minutes, it says 10 to 1 to 6. However, that failed to include the proxy votes from last week's meeting that Vice President Letterman and Parikh were holding. So I ask unanimous consent to amend that to reflect the vote count of 11 to 2 to 4.
That motion is in order. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, that does pass. The minutes will be amended as such. Any other motions on the floor? Representative Everett.
A motion to pass last week's meeting minutes by unanimous consent.
That motion is in order. There's a second. Any dissent? Seeing no dissent, the meeting minutes are passed. We will now move on to the next filled slot on our agenda, this item 7 reports. We will start with Vice President of Finance, Rocco De Lorenzo.
Yeah, I like that.
Now that we're in the swing of things with the Appropriations Committee and we're starting to meet with these organizations, last weekend we met on Sunday. We met with CU Tonight, Club Sports Council, and Athletics. And then this weekend, I believe we're meeting with, let me double check just so we get it right. Cool. So this weekend, we're meeting with CPFB, Community Partnership Funding Board. Then we're meeting with the Alternative Breaks byline, and then with Club Insurance. And so that meeting is going to be from 11 to 3 o'clock. On Sunday, September 24th in Upson Hall 146. Okay, cool. So now that is out of the way, If it's okay, we're going to skip see you tonight until the end. We're going to cover Club Sports Council and Athletics first. So basically, in the hearing with Club Sports Council, the report is actually in the box for this today's meeting material, so I encourage people to follow along. But essentially, Club Sports Council last year, they were funded $22 per student per year from the student activity fee. This year, they requested $30 per student per year of the student activity fee. And the Appropriations Committee recommended a increase to $29. So we did not fulfill their full request. When I did send them this report and I said, hey, here, reply by Wednesday if you want to, I got no reply. So I'm going to assume that they were okay with it. And basically in this meeting, Club Sports Council kind of covered the fact that before they were their own byline in 2022, all club sports were under SAFC. And so SAFC's previous structure basically had it so that the maximum tier was $15,000 per year that a club could have. Obviously, a lot of those clubs that received that amount of money were all these club sports teams that did travel a lot, and they're very high caliber teams. When the switch was made, they proportionally decreased SAFC's allocation from 137.91 to, I believe, 113 something and change. And that money was then moved to its own byline as the Club Sports Council, where they were allocated $22 per student per year. In this new model, they basically had a lot more teams apply and be under Club Sports Council than I think that they had originally intended. As a result of that, pretty much Club Sports Council made it so that the maximum tier per year could be $6,000. And so for clubs that were used to be spending $15,000 as their max, and now they're getting moved down to a max of six, it was definitely a real challenge. A lot of these issues are mainly driven by the fact that club sports is a very cost-intensive thing. And so, you know, from the things that they highlighted, like the field rentals to the travel and lodging, to then the tournament entry fees, it does present somewhat of a barrier. And for some of the teams, because there's obviously a spectrum of sports and what they actually play and the equipment use, basically, you know, for example, club frisbee is a lot cheaper to play than club hockey, right? And so to make up for that discrepancy, despite, for example, club hockey being at potentially the maximum tier of funding, they actually have to charge dues to their members on a yearly basis in order to cover the rink rental to go and practice, as well as the equipment and some of the travel involved. In sort of like this analysis, and in 2022, when this change was actually made, they created this thing called the Tournament Fund, which it was an unlockable tier that clubs within Club Sports Council could achieve if they made it to the point where they maxed out all the money that they had, and then they could apply because of this tournament fund to go and play in their tournaments, right? So what this essentially did is stopped, because, right, the alternative was they allocate 10,000 per org, and then that money's locked up in that org. But this allowed them to basically fund for the teams that actually needed it, right? And so while this was a good change, it still didn't make up for this discrepancy within the funding tiers and the money required. Basically, Club Sports Council, when they came to the meeting, they did a study beforehand of 52 or 53 of their 70 plus, or of their like 103 teams or something like that. So it was a pretty good subsample. And the average cost per player out of pocket and dues that these club teams had to pay, it was around $285 per year. My initial reaction to that was, I would suspect that that number is a bit lower in terms of median, because you have some of those really, really high caliber teams and those dues, like, you know, really pulling up the average, because some of the teams just don't charge any dues. So I was sort of correct in that assumption. And so when I actually got the data set, they did reveal that the median cost was $150 per student per year, I think per year. And so, you know, in the end, their justification of going to $30, in the committee's opinion, what that would do is they want to expand the max tier cap from $6,000 to $8,000 per year for those high performing teams. But in doing so, you kind of enhance the discrepancy between the different funding tiers. So if all of the teams currently at $6,000 went to $8,000, that would be an additional $50,000 for funding that they would have to allocate. While at the same time, right, I think it's a reasonable assumption to assume that teams will then continue to move up tiers over time. And so in looking at covering this, if their goal at the end is to limit the dues that players pay, there's a certain level to this where if you threw so much money at it, right, and you made, like, the only way that they could address this is actually by increasing the tiers beyond that cap, which would then not set SAFC, Club Sports Council, and Interfaith in sync. So then, for example, if I funded the, or, you know, if I wanted to create the recreational slip and slide club, right, and that would normally be under SAFC, I could then put it under Club Sports Council and get more money, which is why they don't, which is why those tiers are standardized. In this discussion, we also talked about the actual number of people that are on the teams. And so while some teams have a lot of people and they do everything here at Cornell, you know, they have 50 to 60 people, there are also teams which, number one, they make you try out, they deny players from being on it. And at the same time, their max player roster is like 15 people. And then some of these club teams really have less than five people playing it, right? And their allocations are still pretty high. I think that a problem that they saw before SAFC, or before that switch to make it its own byline, was that these club sports teams would have all this money, and then let's say they didn't make the tournament, the club sports teams would pretty much do everything possible to hold on to that money, right? And what I mean by that is, instead of just buying one sweatshirt and hoodie for the year for the team, they would buy like six, right? And so it's just kind of like you spend it or you lose it. At the same time, I've also heard of stories of you know, people being reimbursed for gas money at the end of the year, but it's essentially them just expensing gas receipts because they're like acting like everyone drove separately when they all drive together. So there is some level of fraudulent behavior going on within these club sports teams that I think this new model helped to adjust that, and it helped to fix that. I think that I have confidence within Club Sports Council in order to audit these clubs. I would like to see a little bit more in terms of, you know, they're under the model now where they press a button and then that money's the clubs and they can spend it however they want. But they're assigned like one of five Club Sports Council exec boards as like a consultant, right? And so then when they can go and consult with them, look at their budget, see what they need. I just, you know, I would want to see just maybe a little bit more oversight over what they're actually spending the money on. I think in the end, though, considering all the factors, club sports are objectively a pretty important part of, you know, kids' experiences here at Cornell. And so we, you know, the committee felt that it was pretty much necessary to give them an increase and to adjust it to where it would have been now, you know, where they would have been under SAFC and then sort of where they are now tacked up with inflation. In the end, I think this was like a pretty solid decision. They chose not to respond or appeal it. So I think that they're pretty confident in this. But yeah, I'll open up the floor, I guess, now for questions, because I know there's some weird process where like we can vote on it or something, right? Clyde would know. or Nicholas. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, after Rocco finishes presentation and everyone has finished asking questions, the chair would entertain a vote to approve or deny the recommended allocation. If it's denied, it's a two-thirds vote to change what that allocation is, and then it's a simple majority to approve. So basically, if it's denied, then we go to two-thirds vote to go into changing that, whatever. You can do that for any organization.
Point of order.
Point of order recognized.
Okay. So in order to accept the recommendation of the Appropriations Committee, it is a majority vote. But if the Assembly wants to reject the Appropriation Committee's recommendation, then it's a two-thirds vote. If there is a vote to reject the Appropriations Committee, then by a majority vote, we decide a new amount.
Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. Point of information recognized.
We can't do that. It either has to be a motion to approve by majority or a motion to reject by two-thirds. In the event that we don't come to a consensus on either, then the recommendation stalls, essentially. And then it comes up at the next meeting.
Lovely. The floor is now open for comments and questions for Vice President De Lorenzo. Trustee Swenson.
Thank you, Rocco. I think it'd be important for all of us to know, like you mentioned how like club sports teams like that use the ice facilities are paying like a lot of money to the facilities. Like just an FYI, like club hockey, club ice skating, all these sports on that use these facilities, like are spending like $8,000 per year, even more just on paying Cornell for the facilities. And then like, so I'm just wondering why.
So this is also one of the reasons why we sort of address this problem. Cause if you look at their funding situation, it's not a, we need more money problem to give out. It's a, we need to fix the cost structure of these orgs. And a big part of that is that rental fee that they pay to Cornell for either fields or ice time. And the fact of the matter is they cover that and they're working actively to address that with Cornell to get those fees lowered. There's no reason why I think, and I don't know if I can say the number specifically, but I can give a range, but if the ice hockey team needs to rent out and play and practice, they're given the time slot of like 11 to like 1 a.m. in one of the rinks here at Cornell, and they have to pay nearly, you know, 170 to 195 an hour to rent that, right? And so I think that they are currently working on addressing that across all sports teams, which is, you know, one of the reasons why we decided to give them it. I personally, you know, I see the point of Cornell to some degree. Like, you need to have someone there to maintain it, right? Obviously, when the club hockey team goes and plays on the ice, you're going to need someone to drive the Zamboni to, like, fix the ice for the actual Cornell athletes and that athletic team so that they can practice. But I think they're well on their way to go and address that.
Awesome. Vice President Letterman.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, we met, I was at the meeting, and not a big sports guy, but I do have to say that I thought these folks really seemed really starved for cash, especially hearing about the dues that everyone was forced to pay, at least on some of these clubs. Obviously, this won't affect everything. I'm usually a little reluctant for a big increase in passing off, you know, large costs to students, right? Because all this increase comes out of our pockets. I thought in this case, it really made sense because we want to reduce the barrier to entry and make sure that we don't have students who want to get involved but can't pay whatever it is, $500 a year or something in order to be involved. So I think an increase here definitely makes sense. It's a big part of building community here. So I am definitely voting in favor of this increase.
Lovely. Thank you. Other comments or questions? Representative Everett.
I just wanted a little bit more clarification just because this is just out of my purview of knowledge. So the amount, like at the bottom, right before the respectfully submitted, $12 was like the voted on, agreed upon amount. So I guess how much are we voting to approve?
This is Club Sports Council. You're probably looking at seeing tonight.
Yeah. I am. Sorry.
Yeah, no worries.
Okay, then my question still stands. How much are we voting to approve?
Cool.
No, how much for?
Oh, I thought you said you were going to vote to approve it. So they, their allocation in this previous cycle was 22, and they requested 30, and then we recommended 29.
Trustee Swenson.
I think Rocco did a good job explaining, you know, what's happening, but it's like, I think that, like, this, what we're talking about is very nuanced, right? Because every club sports team is different. Every club sports team has different number of kids who also have a different range of, you know, socioeconomic backgrounds as well. And some club sports teams spend, you know, 10 times the amount as another one, right? So it's like, I think there should be, I don't know, should there be a limit on the amount a club sports team can take from our student activity fee? I don't know.
So there is a limit, and it's with these tiers. I tried to explain that a little bit in my explanation, but the limit, are you referring to like overall, like we partition this off from the activity fee, or like within Club Sports Council? Within Club Sports. So they already have that with their tiered system. Yeah.
So. Lovely. Any other further questions or comments? Seeing none. Oh, yeah. Vice President Barry.
You probably already said this, but just like a point of clarification or whatever. So in terms of like the club sports, so like how do people request money from the different, like from the, like the club sports budget? So like if they're being allocated $29 per student, so is it like they fill out a budget form and each club like requests how much they need? Or like just like my like train of thinking with this is like, how do we like decrease that burden? So like if a club, one club needs more money, like how do we ensure that they get that money that they need?
Yeah. So this goes into a little bit of what JP said earlier, is that it's very nuanced. To my understanding behind the current tiered system that they have, because I know that they swapped it, and we learned this more with our campus groups access thing. Before, someone actually had to go in and submit a payment request, and then someone on the Club Sports Council Executive Board used to have to approve or deny that. The club would know their budget for the entire year based on their consultation with the Club Sports Council, what they voted on. They said that over the summer, that this is really where their prep began, where they went line by line and then said, okay, this club uses this expenditure from their historic spending, and this is how much they should be given now, right? And so those tiers, I believe, SAFC, they break it up to like 250, 2 grand, 4 grand, 8 grand, and Club Sports Council does it more incremental. So there's less money that's like being rolled over and not used, right? So I think they go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6K is their tiers. And then the tournament fund is just based on whatever they need up to 4K if they qualify for it. Yeah.
Seeing no further comments or questions, I'm going to call the question and vote on this. Vote on this. Vice President Letterman, do you have a point?
I move that the previous question be ordered and that this recommendation be approved.
All right, that is seconded. That was by unanimous consent. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, this is approved, 15 total. We will now move on to athletics, and due to time and the size of our agenda today, Vice President De Lorenzo, I am going to give you 5 minutes for this
one. Okay. So brief overview on athletics. Before, they actually used to fund the Big Red Sports Pass, which is this thing that allows all Cornell students to attend all games here at Cornell free, with the exception of postseason play in men's ice hockey. In their new model, again, this was stipulated in our charter. They kind of did this without asking us, but now they're moving the money to basically fund the discount of men's ice hockey season tickets for students, and as well as like marketing promotion efforts, like the free giveaways, the free, you know, foam fingers, the free t-shirts, stuff like that. In looking at sort of this situation, the men's ice hockey, I mean, first of all, right, to go out right and say it, if athletics was fully removed from the byline today, it's not like we wouldn't have athletics at Cornell, right? The money would be found somewhere. And we don't have to go into details, you know, about why, but they have more than enough money. Essentially, they allocate this money specifically because it goes back to benefit students. And so across all of the men's ice hockey discounts, with, I think, like without taking into account the marketing and promotion, they're still in the red based on their allocation. And so, like, I guess my thing is, right, the thing that I pointed out here is that if a majority of it is going to this men's ice hockey season ticket discount, is it really something that allows all students equal access and services to the participation of it? And I think this argument can be made, especially because number one, there's an operational like restriction on how many season tickets they can actually sell. But number two, there's also a barrier to entry, even with the discount attached to it, right? I mean, it still costs probably upwards of $200 for like season tickets, which a lot of students just can't afford. And so in analyzing that factor, we then move on to marketing and promotion. Athletics is sort of taking this method of going through and you know, giving away stuff to pull students there. And I think the appropriations committee's details about athletics and their situation was essentially no Cornell student, because we're so busy, we're never going to be pulled away from our schoolwork or other extracurriculars for like a free, you know, megaphone or like a free film finger, right? And it's just, it's difficult to try to transition these marketing ways, but we suggested different ways of doing it, you know, such as having other clubs here at Cornell come in and actually perform in the middle of like a basketball game or something like that. And also using social media to meet the students where they are, wherever they are, essentially. In the end, athletics was, they were, I believe, yeah, they were at $7.13. Their request was $8, and the appropriations recommended $7.70. When I notified athletics of this, they sent me a reply email saying that this is okay, and they're okay with this this allocation on their end. So they don't want to appeal it. But yeah, I guess that kind of covers the athletics sort of thing. It's a department. It's a little weird how they fund things. But you know, at the end of the day, the things that they are doing just go to benefit students. And so, yeah, questions on that or comments?
Thank you, Vice President De Lorenzo. I am instituting a 1 minute, 30 second speaking time for the section. Any comments or questions? Vice President Letterman.
Other than being upset about the foam finger cut, because I'm vehemently pro foam finger, I am going to move the previous question and ask that this report be adopted by the Assembly.
Second.
There's a second on the floor. That's by unanimous consent. Is there any dissent to passing this increase to athletics by unanimous consent? Is there any dissent to that? Seeing no dissent, the athletics budget is approved.
Okay.
We'll now move on to see you tonight. 5 minutes speaking time again.
Perfect. Perfect. So I have a quick question, because I see on the meeting agenda, we have the appropriations appeal hearings at 11. And CU tonight is requested to appeal this decision. And so I was wondering if we move that to right here. Wasn't really sure behind that. So.
Are there any CU tonight representatives here? Okay. We do have CU tonight representatives here. Parliamentary McGuard, what is the process for this?
We can have the representative speak after Vice President De Lorenzo speaks, and then we'll just go ahead and either adopt or reject the opinion, I mean, the recommendation during this section, instead of doing it during section 11.
Lovely. All right, Vice President De Lorenzo, you have 5 minutes.
Perfect. All right. So CU Tonight funds all the late night programming events here at Cornell. Well, not all of them, but a majority of them. And so basically clubs apply with their potential plan to do late night programming. CU Tonight has a set of requirements that they have to hit, like the time of when it is, and based on the marketing and stuff like that, and putting the logo on it. And essentially, clubs apply, they get the money to then host their late night events. In sort of going through CU Tonight and listening to the hearing, I think it's important to note that after the COVID year, there was a lot of rollover money that existed within their account. Pretty substantial portion. This is due to the fact that there was a lot of restrictions on having events, and so it was very difficult for orgs to hit those while also at the same time hitting the CU Tonight restrictions as well, and then putting out programming events that, frankly, like they didn't really cost a whole lot of mics. A lot of them were on Zoom. As a result, that money basically carried over from the end of 2020 to then the beginning of 2021, and then through 2021 to 2022, that same rollover was sort of carried, right? And it actually went up just a tad. In the very end, at the beginning of this year, or beginning of last academic year, as more of these applications for late night programming for clubs came in, it kind of just expedited how much money CU Tonight was giving out. Quick mistake, because I know it was corrected in the thing, but when they started during the meeting, CU Tonight, their maximum for a single event has only been, or has always been 5K, up until midway through last year when they voted to move it down. So seeing this massive increase in the number of applications they were getting, they just kind of started to fund them over and over and over again. And then eventually ran out, I don't want to say run out, but around mid-year last year, they had this sort of meeting, and it was, hey, we're not on track to meet our budget. We allocated a ton of money so far, and we now are in a situation where we've eaten already pretty much nearly all that rollover, and we're not going to make it to the end of the year. While those applications still did continue to come in, CU Tonight made the tough choice to decrease the max amount of money a club could get for an event to $2,500 with an additional unlockable fund of like $1,000 per event. So clubs get a max of like $3,500 for their events. In basically going through CU Tonight and hearing their hearing and the history behind this, I think a few things came up that at least were of a concern. I would say at least for, you know, they were at $8, they're asking for $20. That's like a pretty substantial increase, near 250% increase in funding just to have on these events. And so because that was a little too high, we then kind of explored where, you know, what else CU Tonight was doing. So in discussion with them last year and maybe a little bit the year before, they started developing their own programmatic arm. So in addition to basically funding these clubs with their special late night events, they started to do their own funding or their own programming activities and put those on. Those are like massive successes. We're not dissing them. That it's stuff like the Moonlight Breakfast, which is fantastic if you guys have been. And so I think that it's very hard to do that, especially when we noted that the composition of CU Tonight is 4 eBoard members and only 4 to 5 G-Body members. And so the way that, you know, the way that the funding looks in the situation that arose, it looks like things were spread a little bit too thin, whether it was a lot of people being focused on programming based on the time. They said around 30% of their time was spent on programming versus 70% for the actual funding. But regarding how much money they're spending on programming, that's only like 10.75%, right? So, you know, in the end, right, having that few people to help you kind of leads to, when you make these funding decisions, you don't necessarily have all the capabilities to fully go in, audit everything, make sure things are on track, make sure that your budget's on track for the year. Another notable factor is that out of their current exec board, 4 of them are juniors, all 4. And so from like an organizational transitional perspective, it's very hard to see how a $20 increase in funding now would, you know, it might help them next year, right? But then you're going to have to retrain all these people and falling into the same loophole of funding way too many awards. Okay. Well, could someone yield me time?
You can have questions during the questions phase, but it's time to see tonight's presentation. So if we could have the CU Tonight representative come up to the podium, you will also have 5 minutes.
Hello. Hello. Yeah. So hi, I'm just introducing myself. I'm Kevin. I'm the president of CU Tonight. And thank you guys for agreeing to meet with me. I'd just like to go over a couple of the points that Rocco here made, specifically the amount of time we're spending on programming and stuff. We recognize that CU Tonight is supposed to be primarily a funding commission for other clubs to be able to host events for the entire undergraduate population of Cornell. But something we notice is that a lot of times smaller clubs sort of hesitated to request funding or even make events of themselves, simply because hosting an event is a very like labor-intensive thing, right? So another purpose of our programming arm is in order to show to these clubs that like we follow our own like criteria, like our budgeting, our timelines, and all of that, in order to show these clubs that even if you don't have a lot of members on your organization, it's still possible to host events that are productive and inclusive of the entire Cornell like population, right? And I think that this programming arm also serves a secondary purpose, not just for other clubs, but for our own club as well. We noticed that while doing these programming events, a lot of our underclassmen members started becoming a lot more engaged within the club. Because it's fun, again, to host these events, right? So by hosting these events, by planning them out, having them work out through the logistics of all that, having them volunteer, it not only shows them like the importance of having these events, but also places them within the eyes of someone who's going to host these events, which allows them to, you know, really, really see the scope of what we're trying to do here at CU Tonight, right? Again, we already have underclassmen asking to be more involved in leadership. And I think this also brings up the point that Rocco made about our e-board just being four juniors, right? With this new programming, with these new underclassmen becoming a lot more engaged with the club, I think that, you know, a lot of these points, while may have been misunderstood within the hearing itself, with this current class, current clarification, sorry. I think that CU Tonight really can become a very sustainable club, just by itself, with like the new engagement that underclassmen have. Yield my time.
Lovely. Rocco De Lorenzo, you have 2 minutes and 30 seconds as the yield.
Cool. So in addition to going through that and really looking through what was being funded, I think one other point, and the last one that I think is notable here, is that CU Tonight, there currently is no restrictions on how many times a club can apply and get funded in a semester. And so in looking at those numbers, I basically saw a lot of duplicates, right? I mean, a pretty substantial amount. And these clubs getting up to, you know, 5K of approved spending, they were, you know, a lot of them spent close, like very close to that. And so these clubs, in order to like be a club, and I'm sure they already get money from other sources in SAFC, are really supplementing nearly double the maximum SAFC tier through going through CU Tonight. And so in looking at the 72 orgs, around 15% of them, they were funded more than one time throughout the academic year. I think the max was five or six. Yeah. And in looking at how much money of total CU Tonight allocated, that 15% took up 27% of their actual budget. And in terms of like allocating money. So these orgs, they're kind of like double dipping into it. I'm of the kind of mentality that like, yes, if they're big, then we should fund them, but there should also be basically a limit. And the Appropriations Committee thought this, of how many times a club could be funded a semester or a year or something like that, right? In order to like slow down how much money is being going out so you guys don't run out again. CU Tonight, I think a shout out. You guys recently implemented a policy where they only fund items that can be rented for late night programming events and are no longer able to be kept. The example that they provided in the hearing was essentially someone tried to buy a Nintendo Switch for like a late night programming event and you guys denied it. So good job. Cause that was sort of clearly like a, you know, a little overstep. They also recently implemented a policy where they audit the receipts of the orgs. But you know, considering all these factors, we feel an increase is necessary, just not to the extent that they requested, in order for you guys to grow and thrive. But given the current operational capacity, as well as the issues of the double dipping orgs, we would like to see ways where CU Tonight can address that, and you know, move up the funding and how much money we're getting, you know, at a slower pace.
Lovely, thank you. Right on time. We'll now go into the comments and questions discussion section. If you have a comment, you can address to the entire assembly. If you ask a question, please address it to a specific individual, and that way they can respond after you make a comment. Floor is open. Vice President Barry.
So I have a question for the CU Tonight rep. So in terms of like any restrictions that y'all may have on organizations like that are requesting money, so like are y'all maintaining the $2,500 limit per org?
Yeah, so just to put some context behind that, we never really saw it necessary to put a limit on how many times a club can apply, simply because like during COVID, not a lot of clubs were able to apply. So now with almost doubling our application from the spring or to the spring from the fall semester, we do now see it's necessary to limit how many times a club can apply. So that's definitely something that eBoard is talking about right now, and I expect to see some sort of decision about that soon.
I meant more towards like the limit of like the fund. So 2,500, is it still being capped at 2,500?
Yeah, so it's $2,500. It's $2,500 plus a $1,000 appeal process per event, not per organization.
Okay, so with that being said, do you also
please wait to be recognized a second time? Thank you.
Any other comments on the floor?
Vice President, Representative Resiga.
My question is to the President, like. I know Representative DiLorenzo said that there is only
40. Could you speak into the microphone, please? Sorry.
I know that Representative DiLorenzo said that there are only 4 people on the executive board. Have you done like e-board elections already for this year?
Yeah, so we do. So we do e-board elections at the end of the previous year for the next year, right? So we have again, President, VP of Finance, VP of Programming, and VP of Communications. Was there anything else, any question that I didn't answer?
You can respond.
Yeah, I just wanted to like understand if like your e-board for this year is set already, and like I don't know, how are you intending to like transition your e-board to like have more underclassmen for the following
year? Yeah, that's a great question. So yeah, currently the e-board is set for the year. We are currently partnering a little with the newly made programming council. So we are creating a new like program council liaison for our organization. But to answer your question about increasing engagement for the underclassmen to join e-board later on, while there's no like official way for them to be able to make it on e-board this year, something we did last year that I personally went through and I thought really helped a lot was that as a G-Body member who was interested, who was like vocally interested in being on e-board the next year, I was invited to a couple of e-board meetings and invited to talk to our advisor in order to, you know, get a sense of how the organization is run behind the scenes past the eyes of G-Body. And also our e-board minutes and one-on-one minutes with my advisor are publicly available to the CU Tonight members. So that if they have any questions about how CTNet is run, they can also just look back onto our minutes as well.
Representative Barry.
So my next question is just kind of like, I want to understand, like with the $2,500 cap and the potential $1,000 petition and a potential like cap on the amount of times an organization can request money, do you still see a need for $20 being allocated from the student activity fee, or do you think that $12 could like be a good medium?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the way we reach our $20 request is we reach our $20 request in two different ways. Firstly, last year, we, with our pandemic rollover, funded around $180,000. I think it's $186,000 worth of events, which I think led to around an $18 per student allocation, right? But we are also expecting the same increase in applications from last semester to this semester. So while we are currently keeping the $3,500 limit, we do expect to use the $20 allocation if given to us simply through the volume of events that are being applied for.
Vice President DiLorenzo.
So I think that response is good so long as there's an uptick in applications that you guys receive. Obviously, like, you guys labeled pretty much everything in here confidential information, so we can't like share the exact numbers, but I'm like looking through the orgs that at least applied and did some, you know, back of the envelope math today with the ones you denied last year, and I can pretty much say that even if you allocated every single one, they're $2,500 maximum. The $20 increase would not be necessary. Yeah.
Point of information.
Point of information recognized.
As long as we don't put whatever information in our minutes, we can, anything that can go before the Appropriations Committee can also go before the Assembly. The Assembly is under the same disclosure rules as the Appropriations Committee.
Are you sure? Because the Appropriations Committee had assigned that waiver. And it's like locked up within the application as well.
Assembly members are actually supposed to sign the same waiver. So we're under the same NDA.
All right. Well, I don't think anyone in here except for the people on the Appropriations Committee has signed that waiver. So
we'll get that done.
Well, Jesus Christ. All right.
Representative Everett.
Okay. This is what I was asking originally on the wrong document. So how much would we be voting to give if we approved it? Would it be $20 or $12?
So they started off with eight last cycle. They requested 20, and the Appropriations Committee, after looking at all the numbers, recommended 12.
Okay, so if the Assembly votes yes, are we approving 12 or 20?
12.
Okay.
Which is, you know, that's still a 50% increase from what you guys currently have. So,
Trustee Swenson.
So, given the fact that we're increasing your student contribution from our student activity fee, you want $20. You have $8 right now, right? It's $12 more. So, are we if we're granting you $12 more per person, is that $12 coming out of any fund or any club or any organization? I think it's some other radical question.
Could you clarify that? I didn't even understand it.
Well, we're giving you more money, right? So therefore, is that money coming out of anyone else's pocket or anyone else's contribution?
Oh, like if you guys get funding from other sources, I think. Is that your question?
I'm assuming activity fee.
I don't believe so.
$12 is coming from like period.
Yeah. I will say in going through the clubs, I think there was one where there was an overlap with another byline that you guys did like a partnership. So there is some overlap there, but I think that's the only one that I identified going through the meeting minutes, which I'm glad I asked for, Loki. Like it was like 120 pages. So,
Representative Wong. All right, Representative Barker.
Hi, it's just a point of information. I just wanted to get a picture of if budget increases are granted among either like CU Tonight, any other place, where is this being taken out of? Like, is this including the student activities fund? Like, is our allowance going to have to increase for students? Like, are we paying more?
Yes. So I guess the breakdown for this is like when you get your Cornell bill, it says like room and board, tuition, blah, blah, blah. And then the line item is student activity fee. And so last year's cycle, that all the fees add together because they vote on these allocations individually and then add it all up, that was $310. And so any increase above that now, so long as a decrease of one org doesn't happen, would mean that there's an additional money required for the student activity fee. I will note, because we didn't really go over this before, like at the end of the day, we can basically vote on this activity fee, but then President Pollock also has to vote on it and approve it as well. And there have been situations in the past where they increased it so much that she just blocked it down, and then they had to go and recalculate everything and re-meet with everyone. So that was like a pretty bad situation. I think this year with inflation, like obviously, I think we started off at the meeting where everyone, all the bylines came, but like it's got to go up with inflation, I think, point blank. But, you know, looking at the numbers that we're at right now, which I can't like go into detail, like I think there's a lot of wiggle room being taken in terms of asking for an increase and then calling it inflation, right? And I think that a lot of this, the Appropriations Committee recommendations are going to be based within the reason and the fundamental financial backing behind it and really analyzing the operational capability of those orgs.
Representative Wong.
I would like to motion to end debate, was it what that was called?
End debate and vote on this.
Yeah, our motion for that, I think we answered the questions.
Second that motion.
Lovely. That's a motion on the floor. It's seconded. We will now be voting on this. Again, 2/3 to deny, simple majority to approve.
Point of order.
Point of order recognized.
Someone needs to either make a motion to adopt or make a motion to reject, and then we'll vote on that either way.
You're recognized, Representative Wong.
Motion to adopt.
Okay, that is in order. Is there a second?
Second.
Lovely. All right. All those in favor, please raise your placards now.
Point of information, this is for $12, correct?
$12. $13.4. All those against? None against. 13-0. And the rest non-voting. Does it count for that vote? All right. Thank you for coming to you tonight.
Thank you for hearing me.
Yes, thank you. All right, and with that, that concludes this week's Appropriations Committee reports and meeting.
All right, we'll now be moving on to the next section of our agenda, the old business calendar, Resolution 21, Solidarity with Cornell Graduate Students United. Vice President Parikh. Whoops. All right, decorum delegates, let's give Vice President Parikh our full and undivided attention while he presents this resolution.
Yeah, okay. So Resolution 21, if you haven't looked through it, basically just expressing the undergraduate students on our behalf, representation, and our solidarity with Cornell Graduate Students United. For those of you who don't know, graduate students at Cornell are unionizing. This includes teaching assistants, research assistants, and graduate students really working in any capacity for the university. They're forming this union for a variety of reasons. Right now, they have incredibly low pay, they have limited access to healthcare, difficulty getting to campus, among other things. There has been two different graduate student unionization efforts in the past, one in the early 2000s, which failed, one in 2017 that also failed following Cornell, and this was determined by an independent arbitrator, illegally violating the National Labor Relations Act by basically threatening to take away grad students' employment. So this is their third union drive, and I think it's incredibly important that us as undergraduates demonstrate our solidarity with the graduate students who basically make this campus run. I mean, these are the people who are teaching our classes. These are the people who are, like, a huge part of our education. And additionally, especially, I think it's important to recognize this year, because the administration has put such an emphasis on free expression and all of that, that one of the most important ways that you can express your voice is to sign a union card and join a union, because that's, you know, freedom of association. So yeah, I think this resolution is basically just saying that we as undergraduate students and as their representatives stand in solidarity with CGSU in their effort to collectively bargain with the university. And yeah, I think it's incredibly important that we demonstrate that solidarity as a unified front.
All right, the floor is now open for questions and comments. Representative Richmond.
Motion to vote.
Motion to vote is in order. Is there a second?
Second.
Second. Dissent. All right, we will now move into voting on that per parliamentary procedure. All those in favor? All those in favor of closing debate and going into voting?
A point of information.
Point of information.
Vice records. President Ting not state her dissent?
No, actually, that's not proper in parliamentary procedure. We just move into voting then. That's okay. Just to let people know that there is dissent to that motion.
Okay.
I have a point of information as well.
Point of information.
So assume that this resolution does pass as is. How would we go about fixing the incorrect class years on sponsored by?
That's actually not part of the resolution. It can be amended without an amendment.
Beautiful. I withdraw my dissent.
Lovely. All right. We are voting on closing debate. All those in favor, please raise your placards now. All those opposed? Seeing none, we'll move into voting on this resolution. All those in favor, please raise your placards now. All those opposed? That does pass unanimously. Congratulations.
Great.
About the section.
Yeah, I'm graduating early. Yes.
This is the so the agenda is misprinted. This is not on the agenda. It's the charter amendments. Charter amendments to Article 4. It is in the box for those of you who are interested. That is what is being presented on right now. Point of information recognized.
Is that what was introduced last meeting but couldn't be voted on?
Or that is correct.
Thank you.
Yep.
Point of information.
Point of information.
I thought we couldn't vote on charter amendments until next semester.
Only charter amendments regarding Appendix B. A, Appendix A. Only charter amendments involving Appendix A. There's a line in our charter that says Appendix A cannot be edited, which has to do with byline funding, during the byline funding cycle, which we're currently in.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, you have 5 minutes to present on this resolution.
Okay, so if you refer to Section 5, Subsection A, the only thing that we changed is that we combined and revised the original Section 3 and Section 9, which essentially stated the term of assembly that commences and concludes on June 1st. We modified this to commence on May 1st and expire April 30th, following one calendar year. B and C remain virtually the same, aside for some verbiage amendments. Section 4 is the same single transferable voting system, which uses the HAIR system, which is just IRV/ranked choice voting. That's the same thing as we did last year. And then we also modified Section 3. If you refer to Section 3, Subsection A, we took this opportunity to just distinguish between ex officio and non-voting membership status. All undergraduate students have non-voting membership status, not ex officio status, which they are distinct. And other than that, that's Section 3 through 5, and that's pretty much all we changed for those areas.
So again, I don't want to bore you all. We'll keep this short. This was the resolution we looked at last week. We presented about it then. Does anyone have any amendments to this they would like to consider or serious questions, concerns?
We can go into that during the discussion time, but right now is your presentation time. If you would like to end, we can move into that section.
Yeah, we don't have a whole lot to present with. We're gonna keep it short and sweet.
Okay. We will now move into discussion. Any points or motions on the floor?
Motion to end debate.
That motion is in order and is seconded. Is that by unanimous consent?
Yes.
Okay, we'll now move into voting. There's dissent on the floor. All those in favor of closing debate, please raise your placards now. All those opposed? All right, that does not pass. We will be staying in discussion. Vice President Parikh.
Yeah, sorry. I just wanted to confirm because I'm not sure if I'm seeing the updated version in the box, but can you confirm which amendments were made at last week's meeting?
We had three amendments were made. The first one swapped out was section one, clause M. That was the veteran seat. We changed the verbiage there. We then, you made an amendment. You added the student worker seat. And then Claire made an amendment, which reduced the number of at-larges from 7 to 6. And then I made an amendment, these are the adopted amendments, that was a technical correction to the total number of representatives on Section 1, Subsection A, Paragraph A, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to confirm because I don't see them reflected in the document, but as long as they're noted.
I think what happened was this is the version from last week. Rest assured, all the correct amendments are inputted in there. Afterwards, I will work with Eric to reconcile it. But we have a record from the minutes of what was adopted. So even if this document doesn't reflect that, the sort of version we adopt, it'll be in there.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah.
Vice President Parikh.
Motion to end debate.
That motion is in order. Is there a second? Dissent is stated. We now move into voting. All those in favor of any debate, raise your pockets now. All right, all those opposed. That does not pass. Vice President Ting, would you like to be recognized? Vice President Ting.
Hi there. I just want to thank you all again for your work that you've spent on this. I just want to make an amendment to clarify under section 6 to add point F to say four other members as designated by the assembly bylaws.
That is an order.
Could you just, before we proceed, would the sponsor mind clarifying where this is to be added?
That would be under section 6 point F.
You're making a paragraph that's not in there now. There are paragraphs A through E right now.
That is correct.
Okay, so it would be printed in a new one. Okay, and what does it read? Where shall we record this?
Four other members as designated by the student assembly bylaws.
Before we make the amendment, I would suggest we put this in D. That's the paragraph that deals with the number of members. If you see, that's line 171 to 174.
That'd be amenable to moving it under point D.
Okay. Would you make the amendment then? And I can.
Yeah. So I motion to amend section 6, part D, to reflect and to add four other members as designated by the student assembly bylaws.
That is an order. Is there a second?
Second.
Point of information.
Point of information recognized.
So right now the advisory board has two members from the assembly. Are you specifying a different four members or bumping the two up to four?
I would. I think that the sponsor thinks that we should put four members and specify them in the bylaws so they can be changed more easily to reflect faculty members and other positions at the school. As it stands, six alumni of a Cornell University, each of whom shall have served either as a member of the student advisory assembly or a student elected trustee, two members of the faculty senate, the university president or their designee, and two members of the assembly. There's no mention of faculty members that we would appoint or any other special designations of people that would be on that.
I see. Perhaps I would suggest we word it and four members, the qualifications of which shall be determined in the bylaws of the student assembly.
I think that's fine.
So I'm going to, should I move that or are you?
You can make that motion.
That on line 174, the period be struck, a semicolon be inserted, and the following text be inserted, and four other individuals, the qualifications of whom shall be specified in the bylaws of the student assembly.
That's seconded. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, that amendment is in order. Any other points or motions on the floor? Vice President Ting.
I motion to end debate by unanimous consent.
Lovely. Any dissent to that motion?
Dissent.
Okay, we'll now move into voting. All those in favor of closing debate? All those opposed? All right. That does pass. We will now move into voting. All those in favor of passing this resolution, please raise your pockets now. All those opposed. Okay. The count is 12 to 1, the rest abstaining.
I've counted for two votes.
Oh, 14 to 1, the rest abstaining.
And did you count as a good vote? You voted yes.
15-1, the rest abstaining. Thank you. Okay. We will now, that does pass. Congratulations.
Point of information, what other resolutions are you voting on today?
We have resolution 23 and, oh, no, resolution 22, amending the community sponsorship standing rules, and then resolution 23 and 24, condemning sexual assault.
Allocation of funds. Well,
reallocation of funds. You can motion to suspend.
All right.
Vice President De Lorenzo.
I motion to suspend the rules and move resolution 23 above resolution 22.
That is an order. Is there a second?
Can you repeat what you just said, please? Sorry.
I motion to suspend the rules and move resolution 23 in front of resolution 22 based on the agenda.
Second.
Okay. Any dissent? Seeing no dissent, that is an order. Rocco, you can go up now. Vice President Delorenzo, you have 5 minutes.
Sounds like a plan. I won't use all five, but this is very exciting. So resolution 23, authorizing the transfer of reserve funds to the Slope Day Programming Board. This resolution authorizes the transfer of $400,000 from the reserve account of SAFC to the Slope Day Programming Board. Whereas the Student Activity Funding Commission maintains a significant rollover funds in its reserve account, the Slope Day Programming Board faces serious budgetary challenges that threatens the ability to produce a successful Slope Day event in 2024. A reallocation of funds from the reserve account of the Student Activities Funding Commission to the Slope Day Programming Board represents a responsible use of monies raised by the student activity fee that serves the interests of the undergrad student body. The Student Activities Funding Commission, as established in Section 2, Appendix A of the Charter, is the designated finance commission of the Student Assembly. Whereas in multiple meetings between campus activities staff, SAFC leadership, and Slope Day Executive Board members, the Assembly has reached an agreement where all parties feel comfortable reallocating $400,000 of SAFC rollover to the Slope Day Programming Board. The $400,000 in SAFC rollover monies have already been budgeted by SAFC and Slope Day Programming Board. Be it therefore resolved, the Assembly hereby authorizes the transfer of $400,000 from the reserve account of the Student Activity Funding Commission, the Finance Commission of the Student Assembly, to the Student Activity Fee account of the Slope Day Programming Board. Be it further resolved, the provisions of the resolution shall enter into force immediately upon approval of Resolution 18. Yes. Is that like the Charter Amendment one? Okay, yes. By the Assembly. So, basically, for a little bit of context here, in order to, or actually pre-COVID, right, all of the artist prices were relatively, I mean, they were expensive, but they weren't out of control. For anyone who is involved with like planning concerts, right, what happened during COVID is those artists used to charge the exact same prices to show up on Zoom. And so then when they came out of COVID to do it in person, because of that lost opportunity to make a lot of money, because a lot of them weren't being booked, they kind of took that and ran with it. And so we've seen right now basically runaway artist prices where it's such out past the rate of inflation. And there are people and artists that you just wouldn't even be, you wouldn't even suspect cost that much money. Basically, Slope Day in the last fee setting cycle, their money was not increased. And so they still got $21, and that money, if you do the envelope math, 21 times 15,000 undergrads is around 315 grand of their total budget to put on Slope Day. The problem is just to put on the Slope Day event by itself, it takes pretty much that entire money. And so this sort of arose when last year I pulled the ending balances and the expenses of those orgs, and I noticed that Days, Slope Days spent a lot higher than their app. Oh, okay, cool. So I noticed that their spend was a lot higher than their actual allocation. That's because of internal money transfers. This year, if Slope Day was kept at the same 315 grand,
they would see the exact same problem as they did last year, except worse, because artist prices have continued to go up. And so in order to ensure that they have the opportunity to put on a fantastic Slope Day, this money was sort of agreed to help fund them. So Slope Day's hypothetical budget for this year would be their 315 estimated budget for the year plus the 400 grand. So they would have 715 grand hypothetically to work with to put on Slope Day this year. And so a lot of discussions, a lot of negotiations. This has been in the works for a while, but we're happy to present it because we know how much Slope Day means to people. And yeah, I'll take questions now with this. Yes.
Are they going to expect this much in like the next coming years?
Yes. So the thing with that is that that was a concern that they brought up. However, I will stipulate that based on the new formation of the Programming Council and the fact that all of those orgs underneath them, which Slope Day is, all that money is basically going to be pooled together in one pot for Programming Council, and then those seven orgs pull from it. Slope Day's individual, because all of those orgs submitted their individual requested allocations. Slope Day, along, you know, I guess even before the Programming Council, will somewhat match what this new budget is. So we won't see that fluctuation in quality of Slope Days that was they presented as an issue, essentially.
Representative Wong.
Yeah, I would just like to tell to support this resolution. I heard the same thing about how, like, because of COVID, now everything's more expensive because they came on Zoom for the same prices. And also, like, freshman year, class of 24, they had Zoom. And then last year, I don't know if everyone enjoyed it, but it was kind of boring. So I think that maybe this year, with, you know, allocating the money to the Slope Day board, that, you know, we can actually enjoy the time and not, oh, I can't speak for everybody, but enjoy the time. So I would move favorably on voting on this resolution. Wait, well, I would move to end debate or vote.
Second.
That motion is order, and there is a second. Is that by unanimous consent?
Yes.
All right. Any dissent to closing debate and voting? Seeing no dissent, we will move into voting. All those in favor, please raise your placards now. All those opposed?
Yeah.
16 in favor.
Let's go.
Nobody not in favor, and the rest not voting.
Awesome. Well, thank you all. Yeah, big round of applause. So, yeah, with that, with all that being said, we've obviously been in close discussion with them. So if anyone has any artist suggestions that you guys think would fit that budget, feel free to reach out to me and I'll pass along that info. So they also do the survey. So I think, you know, because they base it on the survey, so, you know, respond to the survey, but then we can also kind of suggest things to them as well. So.
Lovely. Thank you, Vice President DeLorenzo. Another round of applause, please.
Yeah.
Oh. All right. Resolution 22. Decorum delegates. Decorum delegates. Let's get to this meeting.
Sort of broke something up briefly, but sort of in the interest of brevity, I'll cut it and basically just describe what this resolution is. I first of all, I want to thank the Criminal Affairs Committee for working with me on this. I also want to thank Vice President for writing.
Please speak into the microphone.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. So this is a pretty simple resolution. If you turn to the last page of the agenda, you can see it in its entirety. It just adds two lines to the first Student Assembly Transparency Initiative. If you recall, this was the resolution that we passed, which basically gave the Student Assembly the ability to reach out to community sponsors. And have to have a community sponsor support for a resolution that was not internal affairs related. And this simply provides an alternative, which is 30 signatures from the rest of the student body. I decided to add this because in my personal experience working with clubs, sometimes a lot of important things will be relegated to the officers of the club and the rest of the general body will not hear about it at all. There's a lot of clubs that I want to work with, but at the same time, I also don't know if they would actually sort of reach out directly to members of their student body. And I think that we should be sort of maximizing our efficiency when it comes to reaching out to students. And the best way to do that is literally to have people talking directly with just general members of the student body, basically just going directly to them and saying, hey, would you like to sign on to a resolution? So that sort of just gives students the ability to do that. It does not replace the community sponsor requirement. It simply is an alternative to it. And that's all I really have to say. I'm open to any questions.
Point of information, do you have a community sponsor for this resolution?
This is internal affairs, therefore it's not necessary.
Representative Everett.
I love this. I think this is a great resolution. I was just wondering, I guess, how is this resolution, how are you planning to enforce this? How are we making sure that this is upheld, that, you know, it isn't done for like a few months and then the ball gets dropped?
So the original version of this before it went through committee did have some sort of requirement stuff, and I would be very happy to work with members, you or anyone else who has any complaints with this bill, once we passed it, to basically set up the mechanisms for sort of enforcement to make sure that the signatures are legitimate. I also understand that I was talking with Vice President DeLorenzo, and he had some sort of complaints about the publicity of signatures on sort of more controversial amendments. And I want to also note, just for that, to get that out of the way, there's no mention of whether these signatures would be directly on the actual resolution. I think what I would suggest we do is we'd have sort of a piece of paper that we have people sign, or some sort of, we develop a document, a very specific document with a certain format to have as like a template for people to sign. Then we get those signatures with the net IDs. We reach out to those students to confirm they actually had the signature. And then on the actual resolution, it would just say, instead of like the name of the community sponsor, it would just say signed by 30 members of the student body. I also have considered the idea of adding an addition to have like sort of a, make it to limit the amount of signatures, petitions that a student can sign individually per year or per semester, so that we don't have too many repeats, which would make it so student assembly representatives would be reaching out to individual people as sort of like, instead of going to the same two people each time. I hope that addresses your question.
Okay. Representative Wong.
This is a really good resolution. I support it. I think it helps raise participation within student assembly. I will say, though, 30 is kind of a lot. I know we had this conversation about petition amounts last time, but I think a club only needs 10 people. So I think it would be comparable. I think there should be like an amendment to have the number reduced to maybe 15, because like a club size could be 15. So I think 30 is kind of, it'd be hard to find enough people. And I think if 15 was it, if 10 would be enough for a club to support a resolution, I think 15 should be enough as well. But I do think this is a great resolution. I could imagine to get like active engagement and things. So I don't know how to make the motion.
Move to amend.
Yeah, I move to amend to strike 30 in section A, or section A to say 15 members.
That is an order. Is there a second? Seconded. Is there any dissent to that? Seeing no dissent, the number has changed from 30 to 15.
Yeah, I chose 30 kind of arbitrarily. I just figured that it was mainly just as a backup in case a certain section got cut, which did, which was basically just making sure that students would go to the same select group of people. And I was like, okay, no one has like 30 friends that would constantly sign a petition. Same goes for 15, honestly. I think it works either way. I just want to have this as sort of a mechanism and an option. So, you know, I'm the cut.
I move to vote on this resolution by unanimous consent.
That motion is in order. There is a second. Is there any dissent to closing debate and moving into voting? Seeing none, we'll be moving into voting. All those in favor, please raise your blackets now. Congratulations. That is unanimous. We will now move on to resolution 24, which is in the box. You have 5 minutes to present.
Perfect. Hello, everyone. Before we begin, I would like to move to suspend the rules. For reference, this resolution is a sense of the body resolution. Under Rule 13 of the standing rules, it would require a committee sponsor. It doesn't have one, so we would need to suspend the rules in order to consider it on the floor.
That motion is in order. Is there a second on suspending the rules?
Second.
All right. All those in, or is this by unanimous consent?
By unanimous consent.
Is there any dissent to suspending the rules and presenting this resolution? Seeing none, continue with the presentation.
Perfect. So this is Resolution 24, condemning sexual assault and supporting survivors. This resolution comes in light of the recent incident that happened last week, of which we all received a crime alert regarding. This resolution essentially does two things. One, it affirms that sexual assault has no place on our campus and in our Cornell community. And it additionally lists some recommendations for the Cornell University Administration to take in reassessing its stance and also giving a clear reaffirmation of their belief that sexual assault does not belong on our campus. I welcome any of my co-sponsors to, I guess, go in more depth on the steps.
All right, so to make this less words and more action, we put in some further resolve clauses, specifically that we want the administration to reach out and make a statement about this, acknowledging that it happened, and also sending some like links to resources to students on campus to make sure that they know that there are resources to support them. We included those specific resources we want to go out to students in the box if you want to check it. I also added, I just want to mention the last be it finally resolved is that we would like to sort of open up a conversation with administration about including some additional training for incoming freshmen, just because I think we could do a little bit better than what we have right now, and specifically recommended the EAAA Enhanced Assess, Acknowledge, Act, and Sexual Resistance Training, which has been proven to reduce the risk of victimization. So just adding that in to sort of open up that conversation with the administration and make sure that what is happening is going acknowledged.
Ultimately, you know, the WHO reports 1 in 4 women are sexually assaulted every year. For men, that's 1 in 6. And on this campus, that's still entirely unacceptable. Seeing a crime alert like that, I know me personally, I was disturbed. I know the Cornell parents group was going absolutely insane, worried about safety. A statement about this is long overdue. So hopefully this resolution makes that, like, pushes that pressure forward and ultimately calls for what Representative Balistrieri said to reform and evaluate the effectiveness of a lot of our sexual violence prevention initiatives.
And I think something that this resolution does that's a bit different than what we've done in the past is like actually like including like tangible change and like recommending the, the EEAA, like obviously proven to show like it decreases the rate of victimization. And those are something that can be implemented early on into students' early education. Like we were talking about reforming the orientation process, and this is part of that, so.
Representative Everett.
Motion to vote by unanimous consent.
There is a second on the floor for that motion. Is there any dissent? Dissent. We just have to vote on the resolution or closing debate now. All those in favor of closing your debate, please raise your placards now. All those opposed. All right, that does not pass. We will move back to discussion. Representative Barrett. You can just talk.
Thank you. Like their social circles or other people that are aware of the incident, and it's their discretion to have to announce that or not. So like I get the common counter argument would be to say, oh, well, they already sent the announcement out, but that's like not up to their choice. They have to do that in order to get the law enforced on anyone.
Absolutely. And we 100% the victim's request for anonymity. Obviously, you know, we don't want to put a spotlight on the victim or their assailant. I think ultimately what we want is just some acknowledgement beyond just a crime alert from CUPD, right, from the university that this event did happen, right, that there are resources for victims who have experience but maybe not reported or maybe haven't figured out what they want to do with this process, right? There doesn't necessarily have to be names included.
Vice President De Lorenzo.
So I have a bit of point of information on emails like crime alerts sent out. So obviously my experience with this and it deals with the fraternities and stuff from last fall, but they send out these crime alerts due to the Clery Act. And so what that is when there's a crime reported on campus and there isn't a suspect that's identifiable by name and they don't have a specific person locked down, then they need to send this out. So I know a few days ago they sent out the arson one. And then if you guys are on side chat, you saw like what the actual arson attempt was, but it was just someone like burnt the corner of a piece of paper, like in an elevator. But that's an example of something where they have to send that out based on that law because they don't have the suspect locked down and they don't have like a credible one. And so I think that that gets to your point a little bit and for context.
If I can respond to that, we're not asking for the administration to send any information, like personal information or further details about the specific crime that happened. We want to send out like resources. So say we acknowledge that this happened, which wouldn't say anything more than what the crime alert already said. And then just like, I know you don't have access to the box. We should really get you access to the box. But it's just like the Title IX office link, report to the how to report to the police, the Advocacy Center of Tompkins County, and then like support groups.
Trustee Swenson.
Thank you for the resolution. Obviously, this is great. Like, no one's saying it isn't. In terms of, like, getting an acknowledgement done quickly and effectively, right, because you guys want this to be done quickly, right, I think another possible avenue is to just reach out directly to administrators because, I mean, we all acknowledge that resolutions aren't the fastest way to get to the administration. It's through elected officials like myself, like Patrick, who is directly connecting with Lombardi and Martha Pollock consistently. So like this can pass, but if we really want to do this efficiently and effectively, we should just send an email to Martha Pollock because this could take a month for her to even acknowledge it.
Can you do that for us, Trustee Swenson? Like,
sure.
And also like the thing with this resolution, like I definitely think it should pass because the same way we just did a solidarity with grad students that wanted to unionize, we should stand in solidarity with all women, all people on this campus openly condemning sexual assault as a place at Cornell that has zero, Cornell is a place that should have zero tolerance of sexual assault. So I think that this resolution should still pass. Like we said, it's not an issue of privacy. No information is going to be released. So
Representative Richmond.
Yeah, well, I want to preface this by obviously ensuring that I stand wholeheartedly with this, the sentiment of this resolution, but going off the comments that were made earlier, I know that a lot of us here have experience with how these can sort of take a life of their own, and even if we don't intend to put anybody in a spotlight, it can put somebody in a spotlight. I mean, I remember that happening last year with the trigger warnings resolution. There was a story about students and that may not have been something that they necessarily wanted shared, and it ended up in the New York Times. And it's something that, I mean, I understand why release, like trying to release a statement on this, you know, is something that we feel is important. But at the same time, I do see the side that this is something that somebody is a victim here. And if we're doing this for, I mean, I know we're doing this for the right reasons, but I think we're indirectly putting that person in a position where they don't necessarily want this being brought up. We don't know that. And I think we need to respect their privacy on this one, because I understand we're not releasing any information. We don't know any information, but we can indirectly be causing them harm by doing something like this.
First of all, Representative Richmond, I just want to say I appreciate your concern. Couple of things. First of all, I think that the news has already spread effectively, just the fact that there was a crime alert. Second of all, on your point about privacy and information unwillingly being spread about Resolution 31 last year about content warnings, I was actually the prime sponsor on that. I willingly spoke to the New York Times myself. No information gets necessarily spread without the consent. And even then, once again, this is an acknowledgement that a disturbing event has occurred across the university campus and that there are universities resources here to support people who have experienced distress secondhand, firsthand, that are here for them. Now, in fall of 2021, my freshman year, there was a bomb threat and a school shooter within 2 days of each other. And it wasn't until students pushed and made an active effort to pressure administration to make some address of it that it was finally made, it was finally brought to light. Given that precedent, I think that, you know, taking avenues to pressure administration to distribute these resources, to address the fact that a disturbing event has not only happened, a victim has come forth, the fact that the victim's privacy is going to be maintained, there is no mechanism in which the victim or the assailant's name or information can come out. I feel as though this resolution is still very much so necessary, as long as well as any following up steps we will all take to speak with administration.
Representative Rezica.
Yes, I just wanted to say that I support this resolution, and also to Representative Richmond's point, with the crime alert already being like sent to the entire like student body, basically, if they're just like acknowledging that the crime report was sent, it's not like spreading more information. So I don't think it would like continue to like exacerbate the situation because it already exists. It's just like acknowledging that it happened, because it's like everyone who looked at their email that day already saw the crime alert.
Representative Everett.
So obviously I support this resolution. I didn't even want to speak about it and just wanted to pass it. However, I do I definitely understand the concerns coming from the other representatives on the table. And so I was wondering if the sponsors of this resolution would be open to an amendment that maybe, possibly takes the focus away from the actual incident itself, but rather a general statement from the university saying, hey, these are resources that are available, because I do understand that for the victim, even if there are no, there's not any sort of like personal information being spread, it would be a direct response to what happened to the victim, and that the victim knows who they are. They know that this is about them. And though the sentiment is there and there is action behind it, it does mean that, you know, there's going to be a whole other email that's going to be sent out that they'll have probably no idea that's coming. And then, you know, next thing you know, they can email in their inbox that's about this event that happened to them. So would we possibly willing to strike 16 through 22, or possibly add that the information is put out is more general and is not a direct response to the event that happened?
You can respond.
Yeah, sure. We appreciate that, Representative Everett. I would support that. So I would move to amend lines 16 to 20 to essentially just scratch those. And additionally, I would move to strike on line 35 the wording acknowledging the recent incident and.
That motion is in order. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent? There is no dissent. That amendment is in order. Other points or motions on the floor? Representative Plackin.
I'm just a little hesitant because, like, putting myself in the perfect shoes, like, maybe they told one person that spread the rest, and spread very fast. For people to already be talking about it, maybe in their life, like, putting additional stuff on them, and this is the topic that gets run through. And then for a big university announcement to keep people talking about it and drag them into what the last few public private thing. I'm curious how people stop. It's like, it's making me hesitate a little bit to making more public announcements about it.
Representative Barrett.
At that point, this is not like a black and white situation, and as easy it is to like make some big announcement and make these things go away, the individuals that are convicting like these crimes of others aren't the ones who are taking anything the school says seriously. So it's insensitive, this person, people who she's going to feel like that pressure from, definitely will highlight this by sending out this email, and she will feel that same pressure. Like the crime alert alone, similar to you said, like it's social circles, it's people talk. It's insensitive to send something out in the time frame. Like this needs to either be pushed back, or like I agree with the amendment to eliminate 6 through 12, but the timing of this is like inhumane. You can't put that person under that pressure in that spotlight, because they'll feel like they went to the school, and individuals start to think they went to the school and they made a big stink about it, because unfortunately these things happen all the time. And I get that you're doing a good thing, but there just needs to be some sort of like change in how we do the teachings in the fall. And I agree with that, but the timing of this, I feel like you should just wait a little bit, because it's a lot to put on the individual.
If you point of information for the delegation, if you would like to move to table, that is something that you can do, which you could table for as many meetings as you want. That is as power in Robert's rules, which you can suggest. It still has to be approved by the student assembly, just as we would by voting on it.
Point of order.
Point of order.
The motion to table is only until the next meeting. If you want to do it beyond that, it'd be a motion to postpone definitely until like next date.
I'm like interim, so I don't know how long.
You have the same voting powers as everybody else. Okay. You just have to run the next election. You have the same.
I mean, I don't know. It makes sense to say this is going to help everyone, but it's not. And those who have been assaulted are well aware of the resources. So I just think that you should postpone until this person has time to handle it on their own. They don't feel like the direct reflection of what happened to them.
You do have a time to respond. Yes, sorry.
I just want to say I totally understand what you're saying. The difference, I think, is that, like you said, this kind of thing happens all the time. And I actually don't think that people know that there are resources on campus. So I understand that the timing can be a little bit uncomfortable, and I'm happy to talk about the timing of this. But what's different about this resolution is that it has action points, and that I'm hopeful that we can actually change the training and, you know, bring more resources to campus and bring more people's attention to those resources. Not only just, we're not trying to call anybody out here. So I totally understand where you're coming from, and I agree with you, but I think there's like something more to the resolution to consider about those like action points.
Vice President Letterman.
Sure, and certainly I'm not the person qualified to speak on this, but I would just say something. I think first, you know, Lucia, you know, we spoke about this. I think the action points are great and really important that we find a way to improve training here on campus, and that students coming in are aware of what's going on and what the resources are. It does sound like there's some time sensitivity here, and that it would make sense for the assembly to, if it's of their opinion, be sort of considerate of that, and perhaps sort of present this not as a direct response, but maybe as a standalone after looking into this. I'm not going to sort of make a motion here, but I think perhaps finding a way to be sort of shed light on the problem without shedding light on the victim would make the most sense here. Seeing that we are coming on 2 minutes of expiring and there's some sort of other tangential issue that's arisen, I'm going to make a motion. I move to extend time until 6:45.
I second.
That is seconded. Is there any dissent to that motion? Seeing no dissent, we will end at 6:45 under the current timeline. You can respond to that if you'd like, to Vice President Letterman.
Thank you so much, Vice President Letterman and Representative Barrett. I think that in this dialogue that we are opening up, we are more accepting and more understanding of this nuance as to not shed undue attention on, if not just like for names, but also how this person also is feeling. Much like what Lucia has mentioned, though, the fact that these sexual assaults, these rapes do continue to happen, reported or unreported, I think is a time to reinforce the fact that these resources exist to begin with, that support is here throughout whatever like steps that the victim might take socially, emotionally, legally is a huge part as well. And it really shouldn't take another sexual assault on campus to for us to finally say, hey, some of our prevention measures just really don't work. A lot of these modules to prevent sexual assault are Canvas pages that people click through in the beginning of freshman orientation just for the sake of getting through it. It doesn't actually teach anything about consent. Our ongoing models of teaching consent don't work. And our current initiatives to bring people for training to have like consent education are understaffed, underfunded, and not present. So at what point will we finally say, how far is too far for something to happen for us to make a change to our ongoing sexual assault prevention resources, our programs, our education? How far will it have to take for us to finally give enough funding and human resources to the people who are educating others on consent? And that's why I think we, as the sponsors, are pushing so hard for this to happen.
I am instituting a 1 minute speaking time. Trustee Swenson.
Vice President Ting, you're absolutely correct. And the emotion that you expressed there is extremely, extremely, like, it's inspiring, right? It's convincing, right? But what you just expressed, the student assembly, in those words that you spoke, isn't conveyed, unfortunately, in a paper that's going to be sent to the president and have her acknowledge in a month. The best course of action, given the hesitancy by some representatives, right? Like, I think as a student assembly, we should unanimously, like, agree on resolutions and passing them. The best course of action to do right now, I think, is to use our connections with administration, get in front of them, give that same speech to or dialogue to administrators. That's the only way that this is going to actually affect change, right? I think we have to respect the hesitancy from representatives, right, with passing a formal document and resolution that's going to blast, right? Who's reading resolutions when you think about it, right?
That's time. You have 1 minute to respond.
So on that, as we know, a resolution is never complete without a conversation from administration, right? This isn't the entire story. What we have just spoken in this dialogue and what we have just said is the full story. So, you know, we're more than happy. And Trustee Swenson, if you'd like to join us too in our ongoing conversations with admin, you know, we are more than happy to include you on the email chain and get you in the mix. That being said.
I would also add that just generally, this resolution, what it's trying to do, is not abnormal from things that the Assembly has done in the past. Last year, when there were anti-Semitic attacks on campus, we immediately condemned them. When there were incidents within Greek life, even though controversial, we did also condemn them. This is continuing a tradition of the Student Assembly of actively making a stance against issues that happen to our constituents, who are the student body, and additionally asking the administration to take requests that at the end of the day, they can deny because we do not have authority over them.
Representative Rezka.
I move to end debate and vote by unanimous consent.
There's dissent. We will now vote on that. All those in favor of ending debate, please raise your placards now. All those opposed. That does not pass 8-7 with my tie-breaking vote. We're still in discussion. Vice President DeLorenzo.
So I think, you know, to Claire, you know, to your point about that and the strategies that they're using, the theory now, right, that you talked about before, I mean, by the time they're in college, right, it's too late to teach consent. And so the theory behind that is you got to move upstream to stop the stuff before it happens, right? And Cornell is actively working on with the Share Center and the Scoring Center for Health Initiatives to address those things. One of those things I'm going to become involved in is like a Cornell social consultant where like we evaluate the environmental space and like how to make it safer for all students. And so like, I just want to like reassure everyone that Cornell is making this effort to address it in these different tactical ways. And you know, I think resolution is great. I don't think anyone's saying that like people don't stand for condemning this, right? But it's almost, I don't want to be like it's a no-brainer, but like obviously no one's for sexual assault, right? And I think that the actionable steps right in here are, well, they're good, right? I think Cornell is also working on stuff as well.
That's time.
Want to add an amendment to include those resources as well?
They're not mainly resources. It's different, like, tactical planning going on. So it's
you know, just, like, give any kind of insight into like, those ongoing initiatives so that our resolution.
Let's do it in parliamentary procedure. Yeah. You have 1 minute to respond. Do you want to yield your time to Vice President DeLorenzo?
I'm okay. I don't think adding the amendment would help this. I just like want to reassure everyone here that like, I mean, they are working on stuff and they're working on addressing this, right?
Absolutely. And thank you for sharing that perspective. I also just would like to push back on the narrative that consent cannot be taught at this point in time, maybe a much later than what we would like to have. Maybe it should have been taught much sooner, much earlier on in development. But I think that these are still conversations that aren't being had. And as much as I am very happy to hear that the university has other means of expanding and preempting sexual assault prevention, we as representatives of this body still have a responsibility to do something to represent our constituents, anything we can. I mean, as people and as this position that we freely volunteer our time to do.
Representative Blacken.
Yeah. First of all, thank you guys. Having an announcement to the school and a combination, I don't think he has a sense. Regrouping the program to teach kids at school or whatever ideas you guys have, in implementing the C and great idea, definitely in favor of that. But I'm curious, is there a way that we can have two different ways?
Given the timing of resolutions and conversations with admin and the conversations that we had here today, first of all, whatever resources that do go out would no longer be in direct immediate response to the event that happened, to the crime alert, right, to address that concern. And second of all, right, like any distribution of resources, I mean, we would be amenable to not sending that email immediately, right, on the timeline. And finally, I think we do want to keep the part that does say we need reform. Like ASAP. So that's the thing. The announcement to the resources wouldn't happen immediately either way. Like we pass it or we don't pass it just by virtue of like processing times, having time, like conversations with admin, scheduling. That thing's going to take like another week and a half because we know what it's like talking to admin, right? Like, getting a conversation in with them, talking to their secretary, it's going to take another week or so, minimum.
Quickly, information recognized. Vice President Lombardi and President Pollack are coming next week to this meeting, FYI.
That is true.
That is true. And we can address that on the floor, but I mean, I think this is a conversation better had in private, with time dedicated to discuss this dialogue.
Also, we struck the part like that could possibly like bring out a person's identity. And that seemed to be the main like point of contention in the beginning of this conversation. So I just really don't understand where we're going with this right now. Like y'all said that y'all like the resources, so I don't get why we can't just vote on the resolution.
Representative Bakri.
I agree with this, and I do believe highly that this should be passed, especially with the timing as well. If there's a precedent, I already said that when things happen on campus, we typically release a resolution or something's being said from student assembly. So I think we should continue that. Also on the lines of no statement is a statement. If we don't stand by the actions that has happened and we stand by the survivor, I think that is a statement in its own, considering the precedent. And on top of that, if everybody knew what sexual assault was or how to practice consensual relations and everything, it wouldn't still be happening or still be as much of an issue as it is on campus. So I disagree highly that everybody is aware of sexual assault and how to handle these situations. And if possible, I'm going to motion to end. Motion to give the rest of my 30 seconds to Representative Baldwin.
You have 13 seconds.
Oh. Well, it doesn't have time. I would basically say echo what Marva said. No statement is a statement. If student assembly says nothing, then we are saying something.
I motion to extend the time by 5 minutes just because we have 1 minute left before the meeting expires.
It's
okay.
Okay. Do you want to keep that motion?
I withdraw that motion.
Okay. Other points or motions on the floor? Representative Balistrieri.
I just want to sort of clarify now that we've, like, with the amendment and everything, the only thing that's in this resolution now is that we're at some point in the next couple of weeks, not definitely not immediately, going to make public what the resources are available to everybody on campus. And also just clarify that the sexual resistance training part that I put in is not consent training, because, you know, I don't agree that consent can't be taught, but we do already have consent training. The specific program that I put in here is for women identifying students who are trying to not be assaulted. So it's a little bit different. It's a different kind of program. I'm happy to talk about what it includes, but just sort of clarifying what we would be voting on if we do vote on this today.
Representative Barker.
Motion to end debate by unanimous consent and vote.
Second.
That is an order. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, we are now in voting. All those in favor of passing this resolution, please raise your placards. All those opposed. Congratulations, that does pass.
Is that it?
No, we're not done yet. Hold on. Point of information.
Let's talk about this with VP Lombardi and President Paul when they come, you know, next week.
Vice President Letterman.
Sorry, folks. Minor issue. I just planned out the time for this. It turns out I can't add. And in the last resolution, Nicholas and I went outside. We added up the wrong number of seats. There are 37 seats listed, but it says 36, so we're going to need to amend something previously adopted. I'm just going to have to make a motion now. Otherwise, this is all screwy. So I'm sorry, but I move that on resolution 20, line 61, that the number 36 be struck and the number 37 be inserted in its place.
Second. Canvas.
That's by unanimous consent. Is there any dissent? All right. That does pass. Congratulations, Vice President Letterman. Do we still have? All right. I would smile on a motion to adjourn. Suraj Parikh. Motion
second.
Any dissent?
Yeah.
All right. Congratulations. We are done.
Like